Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Coming up, we're going to take a look at frontline documentaries, Generation Like, about the effects of liking, retweeting, and how it's changing us, and specifically our kids. Douglas Rushkoff is here. He's a longtime media thinker, author, and correspondent for Frontline. His new documentary is Generation Like. It explores the way in which corporations and young people interact online, where the social currency of likes and retweets can turn into big bucks. He's not here to freak you out, parents, but he's here to talk about the massive shift that social media has brought. The documentary premieres on Frontline tomorrow. Doug, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, great to be with you.
So you have been a longtime guest on the show talking with us about the effects of tech and social media on our culture. I think you were here with Brian about a decade ago around one of your first PBS documentaries, which people may remember. It was called Merchants of Cool. That was about how corporations were chasing teens down and using teen culture to sell things. But in this film, you say there's a big shift happening where teens are bringing themselves to corporations through social media. Give us a little context.
In the old days, there were these people called cool hunters, right? And they would hire teens and 20-somethings to really kind of play a cat and mouse game with teenagers, where they would chase down teens in order to figure out what their culture was or what's the emerging cool trend, and then sell it back to kids. Now teens pretty much broadcasting all that, right to the marketer. In the old days, you might put posters up in your bedroom of your favorite band or movie star. And, now that bedroom wall is the Facebook wall. So, marketers don't really need to go anywhere. The kids are supplying them with this data and doing their work for them.
Let's play a clip of a new media marketing executive you interview. His name is Bonan Bao. Here he is discussing the state of social media.
The icons of this generation are the like button, the tweet button, the reblog button. I mean, this is the biggest transformation that we've had in terms of communicating with consumers in our lifetime, And so to not learn how to participate in those channels is outrageous. So to stand on the sideline is not an option.
So he's describing the ways that brands are trying to figure out how to participate in this conversation. And you give the example of Oreo and what Oreo did to align itself with the likes of its consumers around same-sex marriage. What's the example there?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's interesting also in the quote that when he's talking about people, he talks about people as consumers. In other words, they don't see the social media universe as this place with human inhabitants. It's with the inhabitants of consumers and brands.
Yes.
So that's the only way they see people. But what Oreo does is they sit and they wait for cultural moments to happen, like the blackout at the big football game, where everyone was stuck in the dark. They throw a tweet out, you can eat a cookie in the dark. Or when the gay marriage gets passed, they tweet out a picture of an Oreo where the cream, instead of the cream being white, the cream is rainbow colored. So they're sort of jumping on a cultural phenomenon in order to get retweeted. But the interesting thing is, when you retweet or make a comment about one of these ads, the hope is that then the company, whether it's Oreo or Pepsi or a movie studio doing Hunger Games, that they're then going to retweet you. And that's really the payoff for most kids. Kids really want to get more likes, more follows, more favorites. And the way to get those is to be exposed to bigger groups. So if you can get your joke or your line or your comment retweeted by a big brand, that brand is doing you a favor just as you've done them a favor in the first place.
So it's a badge of honor to get retweeted by a brand like Oreo. And when kids and teens in particular that you focus on are retweeting messages from cookies, is that cookie brand, what are they collecting along with those retweets?
Well, that's
and
the
favorites?
Interesting thing. It's on the one hand, they get on the first level, they get that tweet, right? They get a kid announcing to his 50 or 100 friends, oh, I like Oreos. But what they get more than that is a picture of the social network. They get to see whose tweets are leading to many retweets and whose aren't. So what they're looking for is really to get a map of the social landscape. Who is influencing whom? What demographics are they winning with? What demographics are they losing with? How, you know, what is the best avenue in? What sort of comment from them leads to retweets from this one or that one? So they're really living off the data. And on some level, you know, well, you know, Oreo or Trident Gum, they told us that they do, you know, make more sales when they use this. I feel like the real winner are the platforms themselves. It's not the brands, it's not the kids, but it's Facebook, it's Twitter, because all this traffic is what they use to justify their stock valuations to Wall Street. You know, it's not the money they're making, it's not their profits, it's the numbers of likes, which are just as important to these companies as they are to teenagers.
And what do you say to those people who say, look, I'm fine with data being collected on me. I'm going to be online anyway. It's nice to have the ads catered to me and my interests specifically.
God bless. You know, if you see this as your shopping mall, you know, as your consumer zone, then that's a fine thing. And you realize I go online, I'm in the store, I'm in the mall, and they're going to ask me and I'm going to ask them. But then you have to realize then you've turned your internet into a shopping mall. So the things that you're going to see are the things that are brought to you by the highest bidder. You know, that the entire space, these platforms are going to treat you like a consumer, not like a voter, not like a husband, not like a parent, but a buyer.
There's a teenage girl in the documentary, one of my favorite characters. It's safe to say she is one of the biggest fans of the Hunger Games in the world. She spends hours a day blogging and tweeting about the Hunger Games, trying to get likes and every other online reward from the website based on the movies. And so she knows, and she talks about knowing that she's doing the work of the marketing campaign for the movie.
Here's how let's
take a listen, actually, okay, to how she talks about it.
I mean, I've tweeted them a bunch of times, like, hoping they'll retweet me and stuff, because it's really cool, like, them noticing you.
It's cool because when a kid likes something and that thing likes her back, other kids notice, and then they like her, too.
The Hunger Games official Twitter, they retweeted me, and I gained, like, 60, 70 followers. It's kind of, you know, self-empowering to know that, like, oh, I'm one of, like, top fans on their website.
That breathless sense of being so satisfied when you get more Twitter followers as a Twitter user, I can relate to that. But she's aware of what she's doing as well to get that added attention.
She is, you know, and she's empowered, you know, but the problem is that there's very few ways of getting empowered on these platforms. She's getting empowered by marketing a movie. You know, she's not going to get empowered the same way for writing her own fiction or writing her own music or discussing science fiction scenarios. She's being empowered with these little tokens called Sparks, which are the Hunger Games equivalent of likes. She wins Sparks for effectively tweeting and retweeting announcements that they dole out on a schedule. I mean, they've got the calendar. Okay, this day we're going to announce who's cast in this. This day we're going to show this clip. This day we're going to do that. And they are, you know, rewarding kids with really something that costs them nothing. And what the company gets out of it is an advertising campaign, not that's free, because they spend money to figure all this out, but an advertising campaign that doesn't look like an advertising campaign. People don't say, oh, I saw the ad for Hunger Games. They heard about it somehow through their own social networks. And that's how they create the illusion of a kind of organic buzz.
Organic buzz. You feature another, quote unquote, professional fan. He's a young man named Tyler Oakley, who is a YouTube sensation. Tell us about Tyler and how he's integrated these endorsements of brands into these YouTube videos.
Well, this is, I mean, his career. You know, he makes these videos where he calls himself a fangirl. You know, he's got this sort of following of 14, I guess, 13-year-old girls, millions of them around the country. And he, you know, he's a guy who started tweeting things and retweeting in an effort to get noticed. You know, so he'll tweet the Beyonce concert. And eventually he got included in the Super Bowl. There was a Super Bowl halftime show that Beyonce did, and it had a prologue with hundreds of people's selfies. And he was one of them, you know, where he tweeted One Direction, and One Direction, the teen band, they retweeted him. So these retweets, getting noticed, getting liked back, really put him on the map. And what he's learned to do is really to do that as a job. He will tweet out to Taco Bell, and Taco Bell will become one of his sponsors. So he's got a list of sponsors, and he finds organic or so-called transparent natural opportunities to talk about them on his shows, and they sponsor him. He does it to pay the bills.
Let's take a listen. This is how he talks about that transparency while he's advertising for Taco Bell.
I do a lot of like brand integrations whenever it works, but I try to keep it minimal.
Yeah, that's a cool ranch. That's the best.
So how did you feel like that content with the brand played out with your 12-year-old?
Surprisingly, they can always tell if a YouTuber is like pushing something. Mm-hmm. So I try to keep it transparent and honest because they know it's my job and they know that I have to pay bills. They get that, so it's all good. Mm-hmm.
I love that. He knows his fans know he has to pay bills, but he also needs to not seem like he's too enthusiastic while he's pushing something.
Right, but transparency is the key. Everybody says that, well, because it's transparent, it's all okay. We understand what we all are and what we're all doing. But it creates an oddly circular world where, you know, a kid will gather likes and follows and tweets and things, gather a social network in order to become a musician, in order to become a writer or any other creative profession. But then once you get there, all you really have to sell is your social network. You know, people aren't buying music. It's Ford and Pepsi and Coke who are paying young musicians for access to their networks. And I guess, you know, when it's all transparent, what it means is kids understand, oh, the whole world may as well just be American Idol. I just have to get likes. I have to get views. I have to get this attention by any means necessary. And it kind of pushes the net towards much more of a kind of a Jerry Springer-like standard than whatever might be the true expression of young people.
Doug Rushkoff is here. He's the correspondent in Frontline's new documentary called Generation Like. It airs tomorrow on PBS. And that's one of the things that stuck out for me the most about Generation Like, in the ways that this generation defines cool. And you ask at one point whether the concept of selling out at all comes into play with some of these kids who are actively pursuing endorsements from brands. Let's play a clip of that moment.
Selling out. Can you define that?
Well, selling out means like, it could mean different things.
I guess, I don't know, I think first of like a concert that's like totally sold out, like no tickets left. That's probably not what you meant though. I don't really know what that means.
They don't even know what selling out means, Doug. It's amazing.
What happened to my generation? I know when I was a kid, it was like the whole point was not to sell out. I mean, these kids don't know it because there's no such thing really. You know, they accept the idea that that marketing makes the world go round. So they don't have misgivings about it. You know, really the object of the game for the kids in Generation Like, you know, is to win the game of likes, is to become a marketer themselves, is to create a little app that ends up somehow, you know, selling people back to themselves and making a lot of money. You know, those are the rock stars are the kids who made Snapchat, you know, not the kids who are on MTV.
Yeah, getting attention from a brand is actually validation for your work. It's not a sign that you're doing work that doesn't have integrity. Coming off of putting this documentary together, what do you think are the ultimate lessons for parents when they're talking to kids about their use of social media and their engagement with brands?
Well, I mean, I think on the one hand, they have to accept that these are tools of empowerment. These are tools that kids use to express themselves. So you can't really blame stuff on the tools and say, oh, this computer is bad or the internet is bad or something. I think all we can really do is to try to make kids aware of the fact that they're not playing on a level playing field. You know, they grew up in a world where these applications, these platforms were pre-existing conditions of the universe. They see them as if they were natural, part of the natural world. What we can do is say, oh, who made this platform? Who made this app? What are they getting from this app? You know, so that kids understand that someone else is getting something in return and that it may not be quite a balanced or the easiest place for them to get to be, you know, who they might want to be.
And I'm left with one of the big questions is this engagement with social media, is this just the particular manifestation of this generation's being a teenager? Is it like how I would sit in a room filled with, you know, walls plastered with posters? Or do you think this is going to continue in how they engage with the economy and how they engage as consumers, as adults?
You know, it's going to continue. But it's definitely different. You know, this is a different media environment than the media environment of television. This is one that you actively participate in and express yourself through. And I think it's in the early stages. That's what makes me optimistic. I saw cable television go through its sort of awful, ugly Jerry Springer reality era. And I'm hoping that that's just, you know, that YouTube and Instagram are right now, they're in that early kind of raucous phase, that kind of car crash sensationalism, and that slowly over time, people will need to create more compelling, more deeply compelling media to get the kind of attention that's going to keep these media alive.
Yeah, it's going to be harder and harder to get liked, Doug.
But maybe people can get liked in the real world.
We have a preview of the documentary on our website. Go to WNYC.org, click on the Brian Lehrer Show page. Douglas Rushkoff is the correspondent with Frontline's new documentary, Generation Like. He's also a longtime media thinker and author. Thanks so much for joining us again on WNYC.
Thanks for having me.